Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Burger Bounce, a podcast by Steak and Honour. My name's Charlie, and today it is the last episode of Series 3. It has been an absolute joy and a privilege to speak to all of the women that have appeared on Series 3 of the pod. I really wanted to do a female-only series to hear about all of the amazing women in and around Cambridge doing great things, and I've enjoyed every single second of it. So for the final episode, I travelled to Saffron Walden and the sat and had a chat with the lovely Megan, aka Mini Miss Bread. Hi Megan.
Hello.
Welcome to the pod. It's really great to meet you. I haven't actually met you before in person.
I know, so it's mad, isn't it?
It is, it's so mad. It's really, really great to be here.
Classic Instagram.
I know.
Knowing everyone for years before you actually see them in the flesh.
And we're in your lovely home and it smells amazing. We've just been talking about the candle that's on, which is called Cinnamon Roll, which smells amazing.
So it's very apt, isn't it?
It is very apt. You couldn't, if you know.
I didn't actually do that intentionally. I just love that candle in the mornings. It's really nice.
Thanks for coming on, because I know you're super busy. We're going to start at the beginning. We're going to roll it back to your childhood, because I just love hearing about where people grew up, what type of food they were eating. Mm-hmm. You know, were you baking with your parents? Is that where originally all of this kind of love for baking came from? So, yeah, tell us a little bit about where you grew up and kind of any food memories you've got.
So I'm pretty local. I grew up on the other side of Cambridge, Hilton, sort of St Ives way.
Okay.
And I wasn't like, I wouldn't say we were like a big foodie family. We all loved food, but we weren't like all in the kitchen or, there wasn't really much baking going on. And then I've got two older brothers, but we both then all went off to boarding school from 11. So food sort of became quite different at that point.
That's interesting, yeah.
You kind of just got what you were given a little bit, which sounds a bit old school, doesn't it?
So because boarding school, I just think of either Mallory Towers or Harry Potter, you know, and like obviously in Harry Potter, which I think is such a great thing, you know, where they have the wand and the food just appears.
Oh,
you think,
God.
Wouldn't that just be amazing? But yeah, what type of food were you eating there?
I mean, it was very much like a canteen.
Yeah.
That's what it was like. But you know what? It was really good. I can't, you know, you get this idea of it being rubbish food, but I remember before I started, because I was really young and it wasn't ideal at all. My dad was in the Air Force, so there wasn't really a choice.
Okay, yes.
And I remember my brothers sort of trying to help encourage me to go, and one of the ways they got through to me was the food. Mm. And they said, it's so good, you can get so much of it, you can always go back for seconds if you want, and it really helped. That was it. I just remember being in these... Possibly was a bit like Harry Potter, like these long halls with all these long tables and, like a canteen, really. But, you know, lasagna, baked potatoes.
Your standard kind of school stuff. I love that your brothers did that, though, to hook you in.
I know.
Were you all in the same school?
No, they were at a different one, so I went off on my own as well. It was tough. It was a tough age to go off to boarding school, and I didn't have the best time for the first few years.
Was it close to... So your parents would have been sent off with the military kind of like every 2 years around?
I mean, that was why we were at boarding school. The reality is that didn't really happen.
Mm.
So my parents were actually quite close all the time, so I was able to see them. But it was all quite strict, like you weren't allowed to see your parents whenever you wanted. Like, you couldn't go home every weekend. There were particular... like every 4 weeks or something, you were allowed to go.
God.
Like, looking back now, it just breaks my heart.
Well, because you've got a girl that's the same age, right?
Exactly.
You've got two daughters, one's 14, one is 11, you were saying. So you can literally look at them when they're 11 and go,
it breaks my heart.
Yeah.
And to know what my mum didn't want to send us at all. And and I feel guilty now because I used to cry every time I left her. And it must have just been so hard for her.
But also really hard for you because you're only 11.
I know, I was only little, and it was tough because there was only me, and this is nothing to do with food.
Let's go.
In my year, to begin with, there was only me and one other girl boarding, and she ended up getting expelled, long story short, but I had the impact of her behaviour for like 3 years. It was all on me, and there was very much kind of... you've got to be nice to her, Megan, because she's having a tough time. You know, so that was all going on at the same time as being 11 and being at boarding school. And
Yeah,
but the food was great. I loved the food. And actually, you know what else I remember? The great thing was you got pocket money, and it was the first time in my life where I was allowed to go off to the local greengrocers and buy penny sweets.
Yeah.
Without my parents saying you're only allowed three or whatever. Mm. And you used to go in. You got an account at the greengrocers, so it was dangerous because you could go in and buy, 60 sweets. And it just got put on the account, and just after school being able to eat all these sweets, which I'd never have been allowed to do at home. So there was that little bit of freedom and independence.
Yeah.
From
What do you think your favourite foods were as a kid? Which you were like, do you know what? If it was on the menu either at school or when you went home, what were you really
when
loving?
We used to go home. It would be the roast dinner is the key, just a classic. I used to be obsessed, actually, when I was tiny, obsessed with chicken, so much so that when we were kids and stirring the Christmas pudding bowl, when you would like stir and make a wish, I used to apparently say out loud, I wish chicken. I was so obsessed with roast chicken as a kid, and I still am. I love a roast chicken dinner. It's just...
We do.
You can't go wrong.
We had one last weekend. Leo did a roast chicken and we had so much veg with it. Mm. He did, but it was all good. Carrot and swede mash, broccoli, cauliflower cheese, roast potatoes, roast parsnips, roast chicken, stuffing, and then you made gravy obviously with the stock and everything, which was...
It's the key, it's the gravy that kind of brings it all together. And then with the cauliflower cheese, I am obsessed with cauliflower cheese with roast. The way that the cheesy sauce then like blends in with the gravy, and it's just...
You're making I'm actually salivating. I just love it.
I love it.
It was so good. The only thing we were missing last week was bread sauce, which is my absolute favourite thing in the whole world.
Well, you need to cut. Actually, Leo would make a really good bread sauce, but we're going to be selling bread sauce this year at our deli. So it was like, what do we do with some of the leftover bread that we don't use?
Bread sauce for
Christmas.
No.
Oh my God, I'm so excited!
Bread sauce is just my... I just love it, and I talk about it on the podcast all the time. But I don't know what it is. My dad loves it. Like, it's just the thing. So that for chicken, it was always like, we get the bread sauce.
So I guess that does the same sort of cauliflower cheese gooiness with the gravy.
But also, as a kid, we'd have bread sauce with like sausages. So if we had
good. Not ketchup, bread sauce.
Yeah. So if we had like a sausages with, like say a toad in the hole or like a sausage, not with chips and beans, but like a veg thing.
Mm.
My dad would sometimes do a bit of bread sauce with it.
I love that.
Absolutely.
I'm going to have to try that.
And so good. So good with sausages. Mm. But I will definitely... I'm actually writing this down. Mini Miss Bread. Sauce. Bread sauce.
At the deli.
That's Annabelle, a great thing.
So my friend Annabelle, who's the wife of Matt, who runs Saffron Fish Company.
Yeah.
When we first did bread sauce, she was like, I've got to get some. I'm obsessed with it. She says her favourite meal... is chicken nuggets dipped in bread sauce. I was at first like, what? But now I'm like, I think I get it.
I'm going to do that.
So beige.
It's such a girl dinner, isn't it? Exactly. This new TikTok girl dinner thing. I'm like, that's my girl dinner if there was ever to be one. Amazing. I do love a roast. Again, I think you can have that conversation about all the different elements of a roast. But I agree, the gravy... is the backbone. If it's bad gravy...
Oh, I know. Disappointing. I went for a roast in Cambridge on Sunday, and I won't say where. It was fine, but, going out for a roast is, hard, isn't it?
To get
a really good roast out.
Yeah.
And the gravy, this is a good place. It was fine, but it just was like, it was okay.
Mm.
Whereas the gravy we have here is just so epic.
Yeah.
But I can't. My youngest doesn't have gravy, and I just look at her little dry plate, and I'm like, it sort of hurts me looking at her dry chicken breasts.
This is my eldest son is the same, and I'm a big fiend for gravies. I'm like, just put it all over. Pumice. And then Sydney will be like, no gravy for me, and I'll just have breast, and I'll just have, and I do, and the same.
So
I'm like,
so dry.
Oh, come on,
I feel like you're wasting the potential of an amazing mouthful of food.
Luckily, my middle son loves chicken skin, chicken wings. He loved the wing.
Well,
he likes the gravies. I'm always looking at him.
Appreciate it. Proud. Proud moment.
Yeah.
Done. Well, my job here is done.
Yeah, he loves all the stuff that I love. But yeah, roast is just it, isn't it? And I think you're right. Yes. Going out for one is always tricky because if you can make a good roast at home... the level was so high.
Yeah. And then, you know exactly what you like. It's very personal. So how can anyone else get close?
Yeah.
But where, do you know, where would you go in Cambridge? Provenance. Or around? Yeah.
Provenance.
Theirs is good.
We went there for Leo's, his mum and his, Leo and his mum's birthdays really close. Actually, and Sydney's as well in 3 weeks. So we went for a family roast there. And there was 11 of us. And it's great. It was great.
They know what they're doing, don't they?
And their collie cheese, again, I mention this on the podcast all the time, but their collie cheese is just something
else.
Need
to go. I haven't been for a while, and it's ridiculous because it's only down the road. So,
But that's where we would go. Yeah. We would be like, that. If we're going to go for a roast, we'll go there.
Yeah.
Although we'll tell you where we went, which actually was really good, and it's close to where we live, and that's in the Carpenter's Arms in Great Wilbraham. It's part of the Chestnut Group, so it is a part of a kind of a group. But we went and had a roast there, and that was actually really good. I really enjoyed it, so I would also recommend there, because that was good.
I think the Eight Bells and Saffron Walden is just, or not just, but after COVID, I think, got taken over by that group. So
yeah, I think they did.
Yeah. I haven't been there for ages.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you just don't, do you, when you're working?
No.
And
life
and kids and all of that. Sleep.
Yeah. The other thing that I remember from family dinners, it would be after the roast. In fact, now all the memories are coming back now.
I love it.
But this was my mum. She would do the pudding, and we called it live pudding because it was basically like a chocolate sponge pudding. And underneath, so when you'd make it, you make your chocolate batter, you pour that into the dish, and then you make this kind of thin chocolate, I think it's like boiling water, brown sugar, cocoa, and a little bit of coffee. And you just pour that over, and it's just this big, kind of almost slightly curdled mess. But then when you bake it, the sponge rises to the top, and this sauce just at the bottom is so amazing, and it bubbles. And so it looked like the pudding was alive. So we used to always call it live pudding, and that's what we would request coming back from school. We'd say, can we have live pudding? And I still love it now.
That sounds absolutely
so good.
Delicious.
And so simple.
It sounds like almost like a chocolate sticky toffee, in a way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You get that, but
exactly,
you know, that saucy
the
bit.
And
the, that sounds
so
delicious.
Good. With a bit of ice cream.
Oh,
it was so nice.
Live pudding.
Yeah.
There you go, folks. You can try and make that at home. That sounds gorgeous.
I know. I should get my mum to dig out the recipe. I can see it now. You know, those sort of old recipes written down in a notebook. And then I remember my dad, this is the other memory that's just jumped to me, introduced us to the original fondue, where, not cheese fondue, but like you'd have oil in this fondue pot.
Whoa.
Like bubbling oil. And then on your fondue sticks would be bits of meat. So you would just dunk
just
your
fry
pig in this vat of really dangerous oil in the middle of the dining room table. But it was incredible. Like, can you imagine me being cooked in seconds almost, like that?
Yeah, I'm salivating
so
a little
good.
Bit.
And then afterwards he would do a Toblerone fondue, so we'd melt Toblerone in it.
Whoa.
I know!
That is a hell
all
of a dinner.
All these memories are coming back, I know. That was amazing. But can you imagine now? You would never do that with kids.
No.
Come on, kids, gather round to this cauldron
of bubbling
oil.
Yeah. And just chuck
it
in. Yeah. It's actually
and
very
raw meat.
It's actually very it's like Korean, don't they? Korean do that with a Korean barbecue, not oil, it's like a barbecue. But yeah, it does sound great though.
It was so
what would
good.
You have with the meat? Would there be little side dishes that we'd have?
I can't remember. Probably. No, I can't remember. I just remember the meat.
The bubbling fats
I
and
know.
The shh and then
was.
The sound
and the smell.
Oh yeah.
Honestly. Asking for trouble. Brave.
It sounds great. So where did your... So you've got a great story. So where did it all start for you? So you were at school, at boarding school, and then you left school. So how did you get into the industry? What's your little, your background here?
Yeah,
take us through.
There's no link to my training and what I do now. It's couldn't be any more different, really. So after school, I went to drama school and studied stage management in
Whoa.
London. Then at the end of that, I decided I didn't really want to. Basically, life in theatre means living out of a suitcase,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't want to do that.
Mm.
I like my home comforts. So I went into TV for a bit. I did a few years in TV.
What sort of things were you doing in TV?
So, what was it? So the National TV Awards, so I worked for the company that did that when they were still quite new.
Mm.
And then we did a series with Billy Connolly. He did this, like, remember what it's called, but sort of Around the World in 80 Days kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And then there was another TV.
I vaguely remember that, you know. I vaguely, because my dad's a big Billy Connolly fan. I vaguely remember
that. Yeah, it was good. It was good. Although I didn't really enjoy it. I was a researcher. And so you just spent your whole time on the computer trying to find out places, facts about wherever he was going to visit. But then it was all fact checking because you could not get him to say something that wasn't factually correct. I just found that a bit boring. Yeah, like, live event stuff was good, but being a researcher wasn't my bag.
It doesn't sound as glamorous as, you know, I worked in TV. And I was fact checking Billy Connolly.
Yeah, basically that was it. The TV awards were good. That was an experience. And then, so I was in London then, and then I'd had enough. I didn't want to do that anymore. I was struggling. And so I moved back here with a bit of a, what the hell am I going to do? I need to do something different. Thought I was going to go into PR at one point, didn't do that. And then I got the job at the Corn Exchange in Cambridge, where I worked for about 10 years doing the music programming there. And then at the end of that, I started doing their conferencing there because we started working with another venue. So we had a really, it's the biggest space in Cambridge for conferences, really. So managing that. And then that was all whilst I had my kids and everything. And then once they got a bit bigger, I just had enough of, because it was council run, and I'd had enough of being, I got frustrated. I think this was the whole thing that led me to Minimis, was working for other people, working for people that didn't really help encourage you or move you forward. Like, however flat out and however hard I worked, I never really got any praise or reward or any encouragement even, you know. So then I quit there, left, and went and worked very briefly at another conference centre in Cambridge, the Moller Centre.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
This beautiful building. You would love it. But something happened when I was there. It just, I think it's, I'd made that decision to kind of go from creative to a corporate industry. And I'd always been in creative.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it was nothing to do with the job or the place or the people. It just wasn't right for me. And it was weird how it kind of manifested that I just got ill and really,
like, so, like something like, wasn't working, and you knew deep down, and your body was telling you this isn't working for you.
Exactly. And it was so weird, like symptoms I've never had since, and really odd. And I remember kind of walking into the building each day and having to take this massive breath in and like putting on this face, and it just wasn't me. It was so unnatural. And eventually, you know, it wasn't really a choice. I ended up getting signed off sick, and I never went back. And at that time, Jeff, my ex-husband, was working at the Corn Exchange, so that's when we met. And so his job was fine, and he said, look, just take some time out, just go and do whatever you want, work out what the hell you're going to do. Yeah. Which was like, I was so fortunate to have that position, and Jeff was so supportive. And so I just went, I just want to go and work in a coffee shop and work with nice people and not have any stress and work out what my future's going to look like. So that's when I ended up at BC Cletter in Saffron Walden.
Yep.
And I worked there for, I don't know, maybe like a year or two. At first just doing coffee, which was lovely. You know, everyone wants to learn to make nice coffee. And then I started doing their evening events there. And then I think it was during that time I thought, I know I want to be my own boss. I want my own business. I wanted my own brand. That was the thing that came first, wanting a brand that I could talk about and be proud of and use to do whatever I wanted to do. That was my platform. But I didn't know what. I literally, so the whole bread thing, there's no like backstory.
It could have been anything. At that point you were like, I want to do something for myself.
Yeah.
And I want, like, you know, you're kind of like again, I like the fact that this happened over time. It wasn't a flash in the pan. You quit your job, you did this, you did. It's like, this is a real organic.
It really was.
Thinking things through. What do I want to do? How do I want to live? What's good for me physically and mentally? And to getting to this point, like, I love the fact that you you listen to yourself, which I think for women is really hard to do.
Yes, and I remember reading this article about someone else that had quit their job, and they said it'll take you 9 months to be able to work out what to do next. Mm-hmm. I remember that, like, just be patient. And I am the sort of person that's like, right, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
But I had to just let it take a bit of time because it was a huge moment, you know, a huge pivot. And then it was also this Oprah Winfrey interview that I heard, and she was amazing. She was just talking about paths and how you might take a path and it might not be work out the right way, or it might end up somewhere different, but that's fine. You then just take a different path. And it was that almost gave me the confidence to be brave enough to go, let's just give this a try. It doesn't matter if it doesn't work out, kind of thing.
And that's the biggest step because I think people think, put so much focus into something like, I have to do this, and if it doesn't work, then it means XYZ about me and I'm a failure and I'm business. And then there are other people that just go, I've got a really good friend of mine, Alex, she's part of We Three Club design agency with her husband, and she said something this week in a voice message, and it was something like, she said, you know, and I just thought this was so good. Her mum died when her mum was only like 50, I think, when she died of cancer. Mm-hmm. Alex was very in her early 20s, and she's like, you know, life is so short, which we all know, and especially as you get older. And she said, there's so many things that I want to do. Like, job-wise, there's loads of things that I would love to do. And so, like, I get, like, and she's like, you know, I could do this, and I could do this, and, oh, then that would be cool. And, like, her, and I was like, it just, like, opened my eyes to being like, you don't have to just stick to one thing because that's what you're supposed to do.
No.
And I love the idea that she was like, I want to do as many jobs as I can in my life because why not? And I was like, amazing.
I know.
And yes.
And all of a sudden your life then looks so different, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's chapters
yes. in your life. And but I think it's, again, I don't know if it's a generational thing or a similar age to me, I think, but it's like when you grow up, it's like you go to university, you get a job, and then that's that, and then that's what you do.
Yeah.
And actually, flitting, in inverted commas, about would be frowned upon. Oh, no, you can't do that job.
You need to settle down.
You need to do this, and it doesn't look good for your CV. Oh, and I just love the fact that you can actually do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And it's getting out of that mindset.
I think so.
And being free, like you are just talking about, that.
I think what some people would probably hear, though, with us saying that is, well, that's fine if you can afford to do that, but if you've got a mortgage and if you've got two cars,
absolutely, absolutely.
And I think two things. One, yes, when I went from the Corn Exchange to the Moller, I took a big pay drop. So we'd spent a lot of time going, right, what can we cut back? What can we cut back? Because I really wanted this job. And then I went from the Moller to being a barista, so the pay cut went down even further, and we just chipped back. And then, jumping forward like a couple of years, Jeff then was made redundant, so we had to strip back even more. And we're no different to anyone else. We had a big mortgage, we had two cars, we had
children,
you know, everything that everyone else has, and yet somehow we went down to having both of us earning pretty much minimum wage. You know, but there were a lot of sacrifices that we're still paying for now. You know, we've, the biggest one, getting rid of one of the cars. You know, but we're still now, we've just got one car. But it's interesting how you can strip back.
Of course
if
it is.
I would almost say, like, don't just assume you can't. You know, however much you think we can't possibly strip back, you can. There are ways to do it. You can, if you really want to. And if that means, then you can try something else. You know how you used to always go, I'd love to retrain to be a florist or whatever.
Yeah.
If you really want to, I believe you can.
Yeah, I think it's about confidence. And I think if you've got the confidence and that conviction in yourself, you know, there's years that I worked in a legal setting for years, and I always wanted to do something more creative. And I did a fashion styling course at St. Martin's, and I did a fashion history course at LCF, all out of work, because I was really craving. I knew that I'm not going to be, I don't want to be in a job. But at that point, I was single, I was living in London, it was just me, and I was getting paid a lot of money. Mm. So I was like, I can't do that. And in my head, it was stuck. I can't. Mm. I can't leave my job. And I probably could, but I just didn't have the self-belief at the time to make those decisions. I just couldn't do it. And I think there are people that will go, no, I'm going to make this work, and we get it, however that looks. And I think there is a thing about making sacrifices. I've spoken again about it on the pod before. When you start a business, you know, we're very privileged. We live in a lovely area. Mm. We're very privileged people. I've got a very privileged, you know, family. But when we started our business, I was working in London and I was the breadwinner. And Leo quit his job. Mm. We bought the van, and then he was working at Fitzbillies. Mm. So, and then I went on maternity leave. So my money went, and I got statutory. Mm. So I went from earning, bringing in, you know, thousands of pounds a month to £700, because it was just statutory.
Yeah.
And I was like, I remember the stress of it. I was like, oh my God, you know, because there was like nothing, I'd had a baby, there's nothing I'd do about it. And by hook or by crook, we just always seemed to be able to pay the rent. Like, it was just one of those things. But it was a tough time because we'd had a baby. We did want to start our own business. And that meant that we didn't have holidays. We didn't actually own a car at that time. We did, you know, there's all these things. And I do believe that when you make sacrifices to build your business, when things are good, you can really appreciate when things are good. And you can look back and go, you know, you just have that appreciation for how far you've come. But like I said, but I am saying that, being like, you know, I know we're extremely privileged to have support from our families when we started the business, and all of that as well. That is also key.
It's funny because I can be quiet. I remember when I did quit my real job, I call it, and my parents were like, what the hell have you done, kind of thing. And when I told them I was going to work in a coffee shop, they were, you know, what's all our money gone towards, and all that sort of thing. But I always knew they had my back.
Yeah.
You know, I was not going to end up on the street. Yeah. And so that, you know, there's me going, you can do it if you want to, kind of thing. But totally recognising that, like, worst case scenario, I would be fine.
Yeah.
But I think it was that thing of knowing that day to day, worst case scenario, if things didn't work out, we could still survive on 2 lots of minimum wage and we would be okay.
Yeah.
You know, and that was eye-opening and life-changing, because that then suddenly gave me freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No money, but freedom.
Yeah. So you were at Bicicletta, and then where did you start to be
like you said, it could have been anything, and I was just thinking of gaps in the market. Always being a massive foodie, like obsessed with food, so it made sense that it was something food based because that's what excites me, you know. Like we were saying about you doing this podcast, you talk about what you like rather than what you should do, kind of. And in Saffron Walden, there was at that time there was Dorrington's, which is the local kind of
standard bakery. Yeah,
lovely, fills a gap. And then the bread stall on the market twice a week, which was standard, you know, it was nothing artisan, shall we say. So I saw a real gap in the market for decent bread, and that was when sourdough was just becoming a bit more popular. So I just thought, well, I'll just give that a go. But it was never kind of right, this is it, and this is my business plan, and this is how it's going to be. It was, that looks interesting, let's mock up a little logo, let's learn how to make sourdough. And then I just tried practicing in the kitchen, made a few, not even a few, hundreds of terrible loaves. And then it was when I started giving them away and getting a bit of good feedback I thought, actually, there's something here, because you couldn't get bread like that anywhere else in town. And then I remember my neighbour across the road, I gave her a loaf and she popped back over with like £3.50 or something and just said that was the nicest bread I ever had. I need to pay you for it. And that was kind of the moment that I thought,
hang on,
I can do something here. If she's willing to pay for it and she says it's the nicest bread she's ever had, there's something. So it just carried on from there. It was very much word of mouth and the powers of Instagram. Selling locally to people. People used to come up to the front door sort of once a week. I did it because I was still working at that time. Mm-hmm. So practicing, selling in the evenings and early mornings and things. And it just snowballed from there. It got ridiculous, you know. But before I moved out of the kitchen at home, I used to have this big oven that I would wheel in from the cupboard under the stairs, like professional, because I used to bake it all in the domestic oven. We could only get sort of four loaves in, so I had to upgrade this big, like,
industrial oven.
It was like, yeah, a ridiculous oven that I'd wheel in and out each weekend. Then it got to the point where it wasn't ever going away, it was there constantly, so we could never use the second door in the kitchen because it was always blocking it. The house was just covered in flour. The poor kids, like, it wasn't good. It was like a machine in here. So then it was at that point that it was like, right, it's time to move out. That was it. That's when Jeff was made redundant. I was starting to struggle doing it all on my own. I was like, I need a second pair of hands here. So he was struggling to find other work. It almost kind of was obvious, really. He then got involved. And then that's when we found the site on Church Street and opened there in 2019, I think it was.
Oh, May, wow.
2019. Yeah.
That doesn't seem that long ago, but...
I know.
It's one of, again, it's time is just like crazy, isn't
also
it?
Also with COVID thrown in the middle.
Yeah.
It wasn't that. That's what I find weird, to think where I was at, sort of mentally, physically, everything...
Mm.
Just then, you know, that was all 2017, I guess, when I first left Cambridge to sort of where we're at now. It's a massive, can't quite get my head around it. Really.
Yeah.
Good and bad.
Yeah. And it's such a cute little shop, isn't it? It's like almost like when you saw it, were you like, no, this is it. This is exactly kind of the thing that I would think if I was going to open a little shop.
Probably not, because it was a wreck.
Oh, okay.
So... Size-wise, yes, because it was tiny, and I was only ever going to do this almost replicating my kitchen. You know, like, I'm going big here. That wasn't my way of doing it. I wasn't brave enough. I didn't have the confidence to take out huge loans or anything like that. So this was just finding another space that wasn't my home. And so I carried on baking here whilst Jeff then spent 6 months doing that up and turning it into what it is now. It was literally a shell. It didn't even have a toilet or anything. So he did amazingly. It was a proper kind of stealing, begging, borrowing for everything that we needed, apart from two more ovens. And now, yeah, it looks gorgeous, and it almost looks like it's always been there.
Yeah,
like
it's absolutely.
Always been a bakery.
Yeah.
There was a real thing with people going, well, no one's ever going to come because it's not in the centre of town and, you know, it'll never work. Or when I painted it black, that was very controversial. People were like, well, why are you painting it black? It looked like a funeral parlour. that was my mum's comment. Thanks, mum.
It's like, it really doesn't, but cool. Okay,
yeah,
thanks
for that. Really helpful. But it's mad because it's literally 2 minutes off the market square. And I believed in the product and I believed in my ability to sell it.
Yeah.
And it worked. People did come. You know,
yeah.
It was
queued. Queued for your stuff.
Yeah. So it can't be all bad.
No, exactly. So you started just doing sourdough, and then what point did you move into, because I've never had one of these, but every time you put them online on Instagram, I just think they look delicious. Your brown butter buns.
They're so
divine.
Good.
And I've never...
They're quite new, actually.
Are they? Oh, my God.
It's probably been down with a couple of years. But to me, they're probably our newest thing on the counter. So just before I left baking at home, I think that's when we started trialling cinnamon buns.
Mm.
And they were there from when we first opened the shop, but smaller quantities. We didn't, they've almost in some ways overtaken the sourdough because they are so popular. And then, oh, I can't remember, you know, lots of ins and outs, but then the cookies came, and then it was always about doing, I didn't want a counter full of 15 different types of sweet treats. It was always a bit like the sourdough. We just do one thing really well.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the cinnamon buns. We've never cut corners. They have to be fresh. The ingredients are the best. And you're not going to find one anywhere else like it.
Yeah.
And that was the same with each product I added. I kind of just have this sense of things that I know that will work really well.
Mm.
And there's only ever three or four at most. But they're all really, really good. And yeah. made really, really well. I'm made by hand and made with care and love. And you can tell. You can definitely tell. Yeah. But those brown butter cakes, I can't take credit for them. They are courtesy of Floor Bakery, which is in London, but isn't there anymore. But Helen Fleur is the baker that created them, I think. Part of Lyle's restaurant.
Oh, yes.
And I just had one of them there. And I was like, I just love these. They're so perfect with... you know, a cup of coffee.
I just love that. And they don't look too big either. They're just like that perfect.
They're just perfect. And mm-hmm. they kind of melt in your mouth because they're almost a little bit underbaked. So they're quite soft. And I'm obsessed with them.
You are really selling them to me. I need to get my hands on one.
I know. You should not have to dash off after this because we've loaded you up.
But so I love the fact that, yeah, it is just a small amount of things done really well that you're really happy with. And I'm guessing, you know, nothing will go out unless you're 100% happy with how it is, how it, you know, tastes.
It's probably held me back in some ways because things like wholesale, we do a little bit of wholesale, but I've never wanted to do loads because I know that as soon as you start churning stuff out, the quality drops.
Yeah.
And I know I could get away with it. I know probably a lot of restaurants and cafes wouldn't care that the sourdough is not the same as what you'd get in the bakery, but it's a huge part of what Mini Miss is about.
Yeah.
And
you would know.
Right.
Yeah
you
exactly.
would know. Exactly.
It's not irrelevant. Somebody might still go, well, this is great, but you're like, yeah, I know, but I can do better. You know, you would know it yourself.
Yeah.
Quickly tell us about the name, because there's your Mini Miss.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. It sounds kind of a bit harsh on myself, but I do regret it because it's so not really what I am or what the brand, it doesn't kind of match in some ways, but it came about from those early days of baking and I wanted to just post my pictures of it. Back then I remember doing Portuguese tarts and the first time I'd ever made them. And I just wanted to post them on Instagram. And my personal feed was just getting a little bit bake heavy. And so I set up a new account. And I thought, what am I going to call it? Oh, I don't know. Mini Miss will do. Or Mini The Miss, I think it was. Because that was my childhood nickname. So my two older brothers call me Mini Miss. They still do, even now.
That's so cute, though. It is such an adorable little name.
It is
name
cute, but
do
you know
girl.
What I mean? It's like, it's cute, but it doesn't... Like, now, I'm 43, and I've got two
same,
businesses,
yes.
And it's like, Mini Miss. But it's stuck, and it was that... The point I could have changed it was when I moved out of the house and into the bakery, but even by then, locally, people were already talking about Mini Miss bread or Mini Miss sourdough. I was Mini Miss around town.
Yeah.
So just for my own ego, vanity to change it didn't seem right. You know, ultimately the brand had stuck by then.
Yeah.
And the name had stuck. So I just went with it.
I think it's really cute. I know, I get what you're saying, but it's a sweet story. And it's a story,
and people love a story.
Yeah, definitely. And I do think that's sweet. I can imagine, like, yeah, a little sister called Mini Miss. It's just adorable.
Still now, they call me, you know, my brother will still write in birthday cards, like, Mini The Miss.
Oh.
Min. My dad, I posted it the other day. My dad left out a little post-it for me. Dear Min. Blah, blah, blah. You know, it is cute.
It is very cute. What lessons do you think you've learnt along the way of all of this? Like, what if there's there one? It's a big question. Apologies. If I mean, there might be lots of little things, or is there one thing that really stuck out that you thought as a lesson that was learned?
The biggest thing, I regularly say this to other people now, is there's no such thing as mistakes or getting something wrong. Like, I have made so many mistakes on this journey, but it's how I've learned. And I 100% believe we all learn and grow from mistakes. And you can, you know, even just making sourdough, it's such a natural product that you have to make those mistakes to learn how sourdough, how you'll get your best out of your sourdough. Mm. You have to make the mistakes. Mm. You can't make good sourdough without having made bad sourdough. And that's the same with everything.
Yeah.
You know, you learn from them. Like, mistakes are a good thing.
Yeah.
And it's also, you forgive yourself more if you kind of go, this is part of it. This is a good thing that this has happened. Like, yeah. It's not something to beat yourself up about. It's growth will come from it. That's the biggest lesson I've learned, and the thing that I often say to any of my team that are kind of berating themselves for messing something up or whatever. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's great. In all of, you know, a great philosophy for all of life as well.
Yeah,
that you can make mistakes, and it's it's absolutely fine. I think, especially in this day and age now, with the perfection of Instagram and being online, you know, everything looks a certain way, and you know that isn't real. And things aren't perfect all the time, and that's okay. You know, and I think that's great. I think it's a good
But it's interesting that the Instagram posts that often resonate the most are the ones where people are being honest and saying, oh god, I fucked this up. And, you know, Paul Jeff has had some disasters with some bread over the last few weeks, and he'll post a picture of this, you know, overproofed flat pancake bread, but the amount of bakers that will then come out and go, oh my god, the same happened to me, this is what I did, how did you do that? And it makes me feel so much better that even you messed up yourself. You know, people, that's far more comforting than seeing the pristine, perfect grid every time. It's real. You
know? I mean, I completely agree. I think so too. Just to be, real and just normal. Real and just normal and there you go. It's just all out there. Yeah. We all make mistakes and just kind of crack on, like you said, and learn from them.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we just touched on, so you've got your kind of bakery, do you describe it as a deli?
So the bakery's the bakery.
Bakery's bakery. And then you've now got a second site.
Yes.
Right.
Which is really new. Yes. Very early days. So that is the cafe and deli.
Right. Okay, yeah.
How the deli side is still very early days. I think in my head, in kind of 6 months' time, everything's going to calm down and I'll have all the time in the world to really develop that, because it's something I've wanted to do from day one, is more of a deli side of things.
Yeah.
But at the moment, the focus is more on the cafe, which came about really, it was never in the plan. And I remember people used to always say, you should open a cafe. And I wasn't too bothered about it. It made me nervous because a cafe needs staff, lots of staff. And everyone has always said staff is the hardest thing. In running a business.
And trying to get them as well after COVID,
retaining
especially.
Keeping them happy. So I was always very wary for that reason. And there are a lot of cafes in Saffron Walden already. But then out of the blue, I got this email from David Reed, who's the managing director of Angela Reed, which is a big, beautiful homeware shop in the centre of Saffron Walden. And they've also got a second site, which is the second-hand antiques. You would love it. It's a treasure trove.
Is that in Saffron Walden?
Yeah, that's on Church Street. Ooh. It's amazing. You can find some beautiful stuff there. And they've always had a cafe in their main shop. And he approached me and said, we're just having a rejiggle of everything. Long story short, would you like to take over the cafe? I remember getting the email. This was in May this year. And it was like, I just knew. Like, I didn't really even have to think about it. I had to convince a few people, but I knew deep down.
It was time.
That was it. It was over time. Like, I'd been crawling the walls for about at least a year or two at the bakery, because it's so small, my creative juices were getting so frustrated. I was pissing Jeff off no end because I wanted to do more and grow. And he was like, I'm at my limits, Megan, please. You know? So I was ready for the next thing. But this was a really nice opportunity because David gave it to me on really good terms. There was already the kitchen there, the cafe was already there. It was a safe jump rather than going from zero, finding a site, paying commercial rent, having to kit it all out, you know, which again is just not my way of doing things. Mm-hmm. I'm not willing to take financial risks like that.
Mm.
So then it was more just turning it into a mini miss space rather than the Angela Reid space it was. So that, yeah, that started in May and then we opened in end of September. So we've been open now, where are we?
It's about six weeks, near the end of, eight weeks.
Yeah, so it's still really early days, but it's going really well. It's lovely. We've changed it into a far more kind of cosy, calm space. I really wanted it to not be a loud, bustling, busy cafe. It's just a nice little retreat from life kind of thing. We get a lot of people coming in going, why haven't you got more tables? You need to squeeze more tables in. But that's the opposite of what we want to do. If we can make it work with more space and it being calm, and there's some soft seats, there's cosy corners and things, you know, it's just a nice escape from the world.
It sounds gorgeous.
Which is lovely. And then the menu is an all-day dining menu. And it's, again, kind of quite comfort food. You've got porridge on there. You've got beautiful, poached eggs with a chili butter and labneh, all served with sourdough on the side. We've just started doing French onion soup, which is flying out.
That's one of my favourite things.
It's so good, and it's just comfort food. We've got a crumble now on there as well. You know, that's what it's all about, just coming up and just having a bit of comfort and time out. And it's really lovely. So it's early days.
But you're really happy with how it's going?
So far, so good.
Yeah.
I mean, it is... Again, talking about mistakes and learning, the learning curve has been steep. Because I've never done this before. I'm just throwing myself in at the deep end. I've gone from 3 staff to 13.
Wow. You know,
including 2 chefs. I've never worked with chefs before. I feel for them because I've come into their space. They were there before. Come into their space, not knowing what I was doing, and just gone, right, let's shake this up a little bit. Mm-hmm. They're a bit like, what the hell are you doing, Megan? You know. But... You know, it's exciting. It's a really, although it's terrifying and so much work, I'm now just excited for the opportunities. It's a big space as well, so there's so much potential. Like I was saying about the deli, you know, moving forward, I want to do a lot more in-house produced stuff. I don't just want a deli that's like every other deli where there's, you know, the olives that everyone's got, the crisps that everyone's got.
Yeah, because there is that danger, isn't there? Yeah. You know, that it becomes textbook. You go into everyone, and it's all got the same stuff, which is great. But it's always good to have like interesting things that you can't get elsewhere, that people have to come and visit you just to buy. And and I love that. But also, it's so interesting.
Well, this is it. It's if people come and have something that we sell, they can then go and buy some. And
yeah, I love that. I do like that.
You know, And it's lovely knowing that it's been made just downstairs by our chefs.
Yeah.
And it's stuff that we really love. We're not just putting this on the shelves because we think it'll sell.
Yeah.
It's stuff that we are so proud of. We want you to be able to take a piece of it home as well.
Because you have Liz, don't you? Modern Table. Didn't she? Did she do granola? Yeah. She at your...
That's at the bakery.
Bakery, isn't
she
it?
She does.
Yeah.
People are upset. That's been interesting because with the deli, we've obviously started doing our own granola and jam. But at the bakery, her granola and jam is so popular. And it doesn't make business sense at all. I should be putting my own product in there. But people love it. Mm. And I'm not going to stop doing it because Liz's produce is beautiful.
She's just
love it.
She's just a great chef. I mean, she's a lovely person as
well. That's the other
but
thing.
But she's also like... just a brilliant chef. Everything she makes, like, I just say to her all the time, this is amazing. And she's like, is it? I'm like... It's just great, like everything.
She's such a natural.
She is, and she's also really, really lovely person as well, which makes it even better, doesn't it? Just makes it even better. So I was just going to touch on your plans for the future. So you kind of already said that you've got kind of plans to create the deli, your vision of the deli. So I think that's probably enough for now, is it? And then in a year, I'll come back in a year and then you can tell me year when the, like you said, when you're getting a bit itchy again, the next thing.
I think that's it. I think, I mean, you know what, there is so much. I think within the next year, doing more in the deli, I'm really keen to use the space for events. It's such a beautiful space. Get open in the evenings a little bit would be really nice. We did our first pop-up downstairs. It was the Christmas light switch on.
Yeah.
And so we have a stall out front selling our toasties, and that went really well. So I definitely want to do more of that because it's great being so close to the market square. There's a real kind of footfall there. Doing more of that. And after that, I mean, there are a few little things possibly bubbling away in the background. But again, I'm just like, just put the brakes on, Megan. At the moment, it's all about getting the basics right. You know, I'm still, it's going to be a while before I've got everything running the way I want it to run. And then, you know, staff are going to leave and, you know, it's going to be a constant
circle. Yeah.
So I think I've learned from, you know, first time round at the bakery that I can't, it's dangerous and damaging to rush to do all the sort of fun things before the basics are right. You know, that's got to be working really well, or at least, you know, a good 80-90%. And then the other stuff
will come.
It will come.
It will present itself and it will come.
Exactly.
What about a book? Have you thought about doing a book?
I would love to do a book, even from probably before I even started all this. I don't know why.
I can totally see a Mini Miss Bread book. I like
writing and I like stories, and I know what it would be. It would be, you know, beautiful photography and then just stories from the bakery.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Just that, and then the odd recipe. You know, people would say, do a recipe book, but I don't feel like I'm qualified to because I'm not, I still don't think of myself as a baker. You know, I just learned to make good sourdough. That's very different.
I make bread, but I'm not a baker.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Sounds like, but I mean, that
stories from
the bakery. I know. I mean, come on now. That's but then amazing. I'm like,
is that just me and my ego going, well, that's, you know, I just want to talk about my business because I'm proud of it. But I don't know, but I would buy it.
So if we can throw that a manifest there, that's the next thing. I think that would be great. It would be, but yeah, beautiful photography. Because one of the, I love Nigel Slater's books, and his are story books with recipes in, aren't they? I've got the Christmas book, which is just to dive. His Christmas Chronicles is to, honestly, especially this time of year, and it starts from midwinter. So it starts from like November through to February, and there's recipes, but then he talks about on different days. It is the most cosy, beautiful, Christmassy, wintry kind of book. And I feel like, you know, that's what I mean. It's not just a, here's a recipe for this, and there's all...
It's about conjuring up those feelings, isn't it? And when there's a story linked to every photo or recipe, it's just then you can just read it as a book. You don't even need to make anything.
Exactly.
You can just look at it and feel a bit...
Although you should definitely put your Alive pudding in it, because that's got a great story. Yes. And obviously it tastes amazing as well. That would be a great one for the book. Maybe just throwing it out there.
Pass the fondue.
Yeah, not the fondue, but the Alive pudding would be a great one for. Right, so just, can we do that? Yeah, can we do that? Before we get into burgers, there's just one last question that I've got. What's the your favourite thing to eat that you make? Was it the brown butter? We all covered this.
I make for the business.
Yeah, so that you, anything that you've made that you're like, you still are like, this is so good. This is great. You eat it and kind of go, yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, well, the first thing I should say is I can't, these days, I don't make very much at all. So I can't kind of say, well, I make this. You know, I've got this amazing team now that make it all for me most of the time. But, oh, God, what is it? You still can't go wrong. Like, even to this day, I don't often eat the bread. But if I get a slice of the Walden white sourdough that's been baked that day, slathered in bungay butter.
So good.
It's like you just can't go wrong. It's absolutely delicious.
And chewy, and then you've got the crust, and then that bungay butter is so
Gosh.
Tart, isn't it? Yeah. It's got that...
kind someone of... was saying it's described it as quite grassy. It's almost like you can taste the grass.
Describe it as farmy.
Yeah, farmy. Yeah, exactly.
It tastes like a farm. But
in a good way.
I bought some for my dad, and my dad literally had some. And he said, "This is how I remember butter tasting when I was a kid."
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like 75, bless
him.
That's
a good way of describing
it. And I was like, "Oh, cool!" Like,
it's that is just heaven. And I think probably from the sweet side, and I'm really struggling to get them back at the moment. But the Portuguese tarts, they are so good. They are tricky to make, and I used to make them all before the cafe. Now I don't have the time. So poor Andrew, the head chef, is now battling with trying to perfect them, because I'm like, they've got to come back, because a really good Portuguese tart.
You can't beat it.
And you can't get them. You know, you get so many around here that are frozen and just baked.
Well, you can probably tell more than the next person as well. Like, you know, apart from this Norfolk Street Bakery.
I've heard those are amazing.
Great. I would highly recommend...
Yes.
They're the, if I get any around here.
Yeah, that's where you go.
That's where you go. Yeah, so Norfolk Street Bakery. They're
brilliant. So lovely. And they're so simple. And yet, oh God, they're just heaven.
And with a coffee, I feel like, what a great breakfast.
Oh my God.
You know, just
and again,
a
because they're little. Yeah. I think that's the thing. You know, they're little and the custard. Oh.
We've just been away. We had managed to go away for 4 days with no children.
Oh.
It was a... military operation with friends coming up. My friend came up from London, my mum, Leo's parent. It was a whole thing, but we managed to go away to Portugal and Spain for...
Oh my God, away.
Away. And we flew to Faro and then stayed one night in there, then drove down to Cadiz and stayed in Cadiz for two nights. No, Seville. Faro, Seville, Cadiz, and then we flew back from Faro. And we... in Cadiz, one morning we got up and went to get breakfast, and we did like little windy roads in the town, you know, lovely. And then there was this, on the corner there was this cafe, lots of locals sitting outside, and inside it was like walnut, you know, like just so beautiful and hasn't changed since the 60s, right?
Yeah.
And so we were like, cool, we're going to sit outside. So we sat outside and we waited, waitress came anyway, and I had a really milky coffee. And then they just had churros.
Oh.
And we were looking at everyone like, this is what? And just, everyone was eating. All the locals were eating. So we're like, we'll have it. And they brought this really thin churros with sugar and had this milky coffee in a glass, you know. And I sat outside and I remember thinking, this is the best. Yes, I dipped.
I dipped my heart
out. And I remember sitting there thinking, this is one of the best breakfasts I've ever had in my life.
Oh.
Because it's just that simplicity of having a coffee. And that's what I feel like. This is slightly connected with the Portuguese custard tart vibes.
Simple.
It's the same thing. It's just a coffee and that, and it's sweet and it's delicious and lovely. And
my ultimate with that is a croissant dipped in coffee.
Ooh.
I love it. I absolutely like a good croissant, which is hard to get, dipped in a really good coffee.
I'd dip hot chocolate croissant.
Yes.
That would be my kind of vibes.
No,
yeah.
I'm doomed. Okay. Damn it. We do a really good hot chocolate with a cafe. I usually resist it, but no.
Right, let's get on to burgers. So, do you like a burger?
So, this is not controversial, but it's probably not the answer you're going to expect or that you get from other people.
Yeah, I hate them.
Because, I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah.
So, I just don't eat a lot of burgers. And this is not because I don't like them. I was trying to think about it, and I think when I go out, if there's a menu, I see a burger, but I tend to ignore it in that way that you would ignore maybe soup or
spaghetti
fish
bolognese.
And chips.
I would ignore spaghetti bolognese.
The
I'd
thing
be like,
that you kind of go, I can get that anywhere.
Yeah.
Because I always want to try something a bit more interesting or different. And I always look at the burger and go, it sounds really nice. And I'm always tempted. Or it's usually or I might just have a burger, but I never do. But it's ridiculous. Because of that, I then never eat burgers. The last time I had a burger was probably one of yours, actually. When would it be? In Cambridge, probably at the shop. Because I don't even get to off the beaten track here.
Because you're working.
They're literally on my doorstep.
Yeah. We used to bring the van, years ago, we used to bring the van to Bicicleta.
Well, that was me that got that going back in your early days.
Yes.
So yeah, then, but even then I'd be stuck inside whilst everyone, I mean, that was ridiculous. That was the first time that Saffron Walden kind of caught up with the rest of the world and started eating.
Yeah, there's so much street food kind of coming in and out of here now, which is, you know, off the beaten track.
But no, Steak and Honour were the first. And they used to do so well. I think we got to the point where we were having you every month because no one else came close. So then I was thinking, right, but what is it I love about a burger? If I did, because I think that's the other thing. I hate being disappointed. And I also have this, this is controversial. If I do have a burger, I often don't like the irony. I don't like the bread. I will often
because
remove the bread.
Because you know why? I totally get why though, because
it gets in the way.
And also, most of the time, the bun is the thing that can let the burger down.
Yes, exactly.
And as a bready person, you will be able to tell by looking probably at the bun, like, do you know what? That looks a bit dry, whatever. And like, I'd rather just, let's not have that bit and I can enjoy all the rest. So I totally get that from your point of view that you'd
but
be
that's
like...
that's why I do like yours because, like, yeah, if the ratio of bread to burger isn't right, like you've got, I don't really want, the bread needs to just almost be the vehicle for the burger.
Yes.
Not, I don't want to have to like get through this massive load of dough to get to the good stuff. Whereas yours are good because they just squish in, don't they?
They squish.
Is it brioche?
Milk buns.
Milk. So that's kind of a halfway house, isn't it? And they kind of squish and melt into the rest of the burger, which I quite like. So then the whole thing is as one.
No, I know.
Rather
than
this big thing that just gets in the way.
I know what you mean, and I think because we steam them and then they puff, they look like props. Sometimes they can look like really. This is probably not the right thing to say about my burgers, but they can look really puffy. But then when you eat them, puffy, they don't. They kind of do shrink. Yeah. So they don't become doughy. So it's not as filling as it.
No,
looks,
exactly.
In a way,
that's it as well. They're not really filling.
They, like,
they don't get in the way.
And I think that's because if there's nothing worse than just chewing on a piece of bread, when you know, so I totally get what you
that's
mean.
That's where I'm at with it.
I do understand what you mean. Because often the bread is the thing.
And I don't think I've ever had a burger like in a pub or a restaurant where the bread hasn't been like massive and in the way. I will always move it to the side. And then you feel like you're not getting the most for your money.
Well, it's not a burger, is it?
I know.
It affects, you know, do you know what I mean? Well, it is, but you might as well get steak.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Ultimately, I just wanted the steak. Now I realise.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, just want steak and chips, that's it. And now I've got this burger.
But I do love the topic, like, I love a gherkin. I love the cheese. I love, would I go bacon? Maybe, but maybe more like the bacon jam or something like that.
Yeah, well, I know what you mean. Sometimes the bacon's good, but I have to be in the mood.
Yeah,
as a general...
Again, sometimes like, I just like it all to mush into one mouthful, and bacon can sometimes just be like another thing that you've got to deal with.
Yeah.
Like,
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. It's such... I love that we're talking about bacon in its complexities as a mouthful. Like, so
different
good.
Texture. I think maybe that's it.
That's right.
I like it all just to...
Soft.
Soft, yeah. Mm. I'm a lazy eater. It's just got to all, like, melt down.
I just want to swallow it. I don't want to do any
exactly.
chewing.
No effort.
Yeah,
no effort. Just melt in the mouth.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I would love also, like, a kind of a Gruyere cheese rather than a cheddar. Like, I think it's because I've just got a sweet tooth, so... I like a sort of sweet cheese, maybe a bit of chili jam. The gherkin just kind of counteracts a little bit. I don't mind that texture.
It's I like crunchy. A gherkin. I never used to, but now I really do.
Oh, I love a gherkin.
And it's amazing how many people love gherkins. Yeah. It's like such a thing that they just go mad for it. But as a child, I was always like,
I love a cornichon.
So do I. I love a cornichon.
They're good in a fondue, in a cheese fondue.
Oh, yeah, I had... My mum lived in Switzerland for a while, and I remember going to visit her, and we had the whole shebang, Swiss fondue with the cheese and the cornichons and the boiled potatoes.
Yes.
And in a little wooden place. Yeah, it was so lovely.
We've got... So when any of our... Because we get cheese in from Neil's Yard Dairy, and it's all best before as opposed to used by, because cheese never goes off, obviously. But we can't sell it once it's gone past the best before. So I'm just stashing it now in our freezer, because when the time is right, we'll get it all out, grate it all, and turn it into a big fat fondue, and it'll be the most decadent Yes, you had dairy fondue.
And then your sourdough, just toasted a little bit. Oh, just a little bit toasted, just so you've got a bit more,
extra grit.
God, yeah, amazing.
You know what else I like in a cheese fondue? This is controversial. My friends think I'm weird. It's a grape.
I can see that.
It's so good with it. It'd be like when you have apple and cheese.
I love that, yeah.
A grape in a fondue. Yeah. I mean, it's a bit slippy, but, you know, if you get your technique right.
I can totally see that. A grape in a fondue. I now need a fondue. I'm now going to be going on, you know, eBay looking for 1970s bright orange crazy fondue sets.
I've got two.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
I love this.
They're amazing.
I love that it's a fondue's a thing. Fondue.
It's funny though, because when I said this idea to people at work about the fondue kits, they were like, what? Are you stuck in the 70s? I was like, apparently it's just me and my friends that are obsessed with fondue. I thought everyone was back in the fondue.
I actually am so enjoying that you love a fondue.
I'm going to get it.
Who'd have thought it?
It's going to come back in fashion.
Yeah, you'll be the first.
Miss fondue.
Yeah. Mini Miss fondue. The next place.
No. Oh.
There we go. Saying it now.
I think that maybe needs to be our first event at the cafe.
Yes,
fondue night.
You do a fondue night. That would be amazing. And you could do sweet and savoury. Like a two-course fondue. Just you and your friends.
I mean, I'm aiming high. Yeah, that's true, actually, because I've only got the two kits. That's quite a brave investment, isn't it? I need to buy 30 fondue kits. This is going to be a huge success. Damn. Didn't quite work.
Me and my four mates.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, great. Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Well, thanks so much for coming on. It's been such a lovely chat.
It's been fun. It's funny, the memories that come back.
I know, but also love the fact we've never had fondue mentioned on any of the pods, and it's been mentioned quite a lot now. And I love that.
Can you add on now, as well as your best burger, have you ever had a fondue?
I will.
There you go.
Just asking for a friend.
Have you
ever had a fondue? And if yes, what would it be?
Raw meat or grape?
Yeah. I'm absolutely going to do that on my next guest. Thanks again. And
thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely need to try these bran butter buns for
come
sure.
In. Come and in. Let me know where you're coming. We'll get inside.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that's it. Series 3 is over. It's been a great series. We have got some exciting plans for Series 4 and Series 5 coming soon. So thanks to everybody who's listened to all of the eps. If you really enjoyed them, I'd love it if you'd leave a review. That would be amazing. Thank you so much. And just to let you know, we've had some incredible past guests on Series 1 and Series 2. So if you haven't yet had a listen, go and check those episodes out. If you fancy grabbing a burger this week, our vans are parking up in and around Cambridge. Head to our socials at Steak and Honour for our full pitch schedule. We also have a restaurant on Wheeler Street in central Cambridge, right next to the Corn Exchange, with seating and a banging selection of local beers. Plus, you can find us serving at the Tivoli on Cheston Road 7 days a week. To stay up to date with all our news and offers, head to our website, steakandhonour.co.uk, and sign up to our newsletter.